Good evening. Hello, if you've just joined us, you're watching Stockwatch. My name is Jean-Pierre Verster. I'm from Protea Capital Management. Don't forget to send us your questions. You can send your questions to 33814. That's the SMS line, or you can email us, stockwatch@bdtv.co.za. Now, things are tough in the media industry, as you know, some cost-cutting, so sometimes the guests are the presenters. Luckily, I've got someone to help me tonight, Derek Janssen van Rensburg. He's from Anchor Securities, and we'll be chatting about the markets, hopefully getting some questions. Derek, today, your comments on a day where there's a lot of red on the screen, what did you think
of today?
Yeah,
absolutely, JP. So I think, you know, a lot of profit-taking taking place and a lot of risk aversion. I think just from a macro perspective, a lot of emphasis was placed on the potential of rate cuts taking place in the U.S., and one gets a sense that that's typically not going to play out on the back of the recent jobs data that came out. So, you know, and typically if you look at the whole picture, you know, one would anticipate rate cuts in an economy where you do start to see a little bit of contraction. And the jobs data that came out was, in fact, the opposite of that. The U.S. economy is still very robust, still very strong. You know, the hopes and the likelihood of a rate cut to me, don't really warrant it at this stage. So a little bit of risk aversion, moving out of emerging markets, and certainly a significant sell-off. But again, you know, that often plays out into opportunities and potentially some buying opportunities out there in the market today.
Indeed, indeed. And one could say almost that bad news is good. So as you say, strong data means maybe we don't get a cut in U.S. interest rates, which is a good thing, but market wants that candy almost of seeing rates come down, especially in this year, just before the next U.S. election, where you have a president who wants lower interest rates, wants a strong economy, sees the stock market as an indicator of how well he's doing his job. So there's an interesting tussle. We've seen it in our local economy between the central bank and the government, and the same in the U.S., where there's a bit of tension between the central bank and the government and who's in charge and where's the independence. An interesting time. Derek, we've got our first question. It's a question that was left over from last night from Leon Crawford, and he asks, is Sasol a buy at current depressed levels in view of the fact that two of Lake Charles's units have started producing and will presumably be contributing to cash flow? What do you think?
Yeah, look, I mean, it's a good question given the current share price sitting at around 335 Rand a share. So, you know, if you just look at it on a pure fundamental basis and you look at the assets and the potential cash flow that can come out of it, it's certainly looking the cheapest that I've seen it in quite a few years. I think, you know, there is a little bit of a discount placed to the value that the market's giving to Sasol at the moment, given the overspend that they have had on the Lake Charles project. I wouldn't be surprised if it overspends even a little bit more from these levels. However, if I just take a bird's eye perspective and look at it sort of with a 3 to 5 year view, I think it certainly is looking interesting. You know, you're going to be plagued with a little bit of short-term volatility, but there's certainly value in a stock like Sasol. Just bear in mind that you've got two very important fundamentals that you've got to keep an eye on, obviously the oil price and the exchange rate. So, you know, depending on your view of exchange rates in the short to medium to long term, you've got to take a view on it. So, where do I think the currency is going to be 3 to 5 years out? Well, I certainly think it will be weaker from the current levels. And I subscribe to a little bit of global growth and higher oil prices, demand for oil starting to increase. So I think it is looking interesting. And, you know, just step back from the short-term volatility. It may go a little bit lower, but 3 to 5 years, I think it's an interesting buy.
I hear what you say about the rand and the oil with Lake Charles coming on stream. There's a lot of other chemicals that become interesting as well. And at the moment, a lot of them are depressed in terms of on the selling side, unfortunately, the chemicals that are produced by Lake Charles, while the inputs aren't necessarily as cheap. So because the U.S. is all of a sudden fracking so much and creating so much oil, especially the light type of oil, it has put pressure on some of those cracking spreads and other chemical prices that Lake Charles will produce. So a tight market for Sasol at the moment. And yes, we hope that over time, those prices will increase for them. On the SMS line, we had someone asking about Omnia and at what price is it a buy? What do you think?
It's been a phenomenal short. I think, you know, this has certainly been one of the detractors from the market. So I'm not actually quite sure where the share price closed today, but this is certainly one that I've in fact stood back from and really actually been on the short side of it. They have obviously indicated to the market that they need to raise capital by way of a rights issue. And I think it's going to be quite a chunky rights issue. So it's got to be at a decent level for current shareholders to probably follow those rights. Until the details of that rights issue are announced, I certainly wouldn't be looking at it. And I think there's some structural issues that need to be addressed within the Omnia management stable. You know, I just don't think it's turned the corner yet. And post the rights issue, post the capital raise, post the rebalancing of the balance sheet, I'd like to see a structural turnaround from a fundamental perspective. So I'd certainly stand back from it. It's not a stock that I'd be looking at this stage. And all eyes will be on the detail of that rights issue in the short term.
Agreed. And of course, the price of the rights issue determines the fair value of the company.
Absolutely.
Because you have so much dilution that happens from a rights issue. It makes a huge difference if the price is close to the current share price or far below. And from coming from a few weeks ago, just over a month ago, to saying they don't need a rights issue, to then soon thereafter announcing they will have a rights issue, but not saying what the price will be, to now waiting for the price, it couldn't have been handled worse, I would say. And you can probably know that the banks are in charge when you have these types of things happening, where it's not the management team wanting to do things that are in their control according to their timelines, but the banks that are saying, we know what your cash flows look like, we can see what your balance sheet looks like, we want you to stump up some cash right now. And you never want to be in that situation.
No, absolutely. And again, just from a broader perspective, if you just look at companies in the listed space with high gearing ratios and a lot of debt on balance sheet, this is the worst environment to have to navigate your way through those sort of cash contractionary periods at the moment, where you've got to rebolster some of those balance sheets. Lots of debt restructuring taking place in the short to medium term debt that needs to take place. So, you know, just stay away from the highly leveraged companies in the current market environment. That's really the sort of broader advice that I'd give out there at the moment.
Another one that has had their debt problems, but they announced a sale of the infant milk formula business, which helps the balance sheet a lot, was Aspen. They also announced yesterday that they retracted that cautionary regarding a possible sale of the European business. The balance sheet looks okay, but they probably need to do something else. What's your view on Aspen at the moment?
Look, it's a different business today. You know, this is a business that's morphed over the last sort of 8 to 10 years into something completely different. This is really a global business that's grown to the size that it's at, got the market penetration in the developed and even the emerging market arena. And, you know, you then need to deal with how the world looks at you from a global perspective. So, you know, typically trading at high teen PEs or even close to 20 and beyond type PEs, it's not going to give you that kind of rating now. So, you know, this is really a, call it 10, 11 type PE type business. And how do they grow from here? So obviously they've got the debt burden that they're trying to address in the short term. And I think they're making strides on it. And again, a lot of red tape from a global arena when you start doing deals, cross-continental deals to try and get deals through. So the timeline, it takes a little bit longer to actually get these deals and the approvals done. I think the business has got, structurally, it's a very sound, good business in terms of what they offer, the markets that they work in, particularly in the US in terms of the moves that they're making there, and again, the emerging market exposure. I just think that, again, you need to see some structural fundamental turnaround, and organic growth is really the key here. So, you know, yes, address the debt burden, but start showing me some margin improvement, start showing me some organic growth in your underlying businesses that are left on the balance sheet, and hopefully we can start to see a turnaround. But again, I don't see a re-rating in this business from an M&A type business that it once was to go back there very quickly. I just think that it's in a consolidatory type environment, and it will stay there for some time.
At least one can say they've got very good management, founder management that's still involved. I think when businesses get into trouble, one of the big discerning factors whether that slippery slope ends up with a company falling in the ditch, so to say, or whether they can correct themselves and hopefully get out of a tough situation is the quality of management. And if you have a management team like this, yes, hopefully that means that they can get out of it. But it won't be easy. There's a lot of work to do.
Yeah, and I see, I mean, look, at the end of the day, Stephen Sard, CEO, is a big shareholder in the business. He's incentivized to get this business to go as high as possible from a listed equity perspective. And actually, I think it was about 6 to 8 months ago, he was actually in the market buying more shares in the market, a little bit higher. It's hurting a little bit in the short term. But I don't think management's alignment could be better aligned in terms of seeing a structural turnaround. So certainly they're hard at work trying to create that turnaround.
Yes. Let's look at a few emails. We've got quite a few that have come in. One from Stephen. He says, good evening. Looks like Blue is going to zero, and Sappi has the same price action as Omnia. Any thoughts from you guys?
So on the Blue Telecom structure, obviously they did quite a significant deal with regards to the Cell C acquisition or a portion of it. With that acquisition came a very, very expensive debt burden within the Cell C stable. Some of the highest debt from an expense perspective that I've seen out there in the marketplace. And that's really putting a significant cash drag on the listed equity Blue Telecoms. You know, the sort of silver lining in all of this is if potentially Cell C does come to market for a potential listing to raise equity to address some of the debt on balance sheet, and that eliminates quite a significant amount of cost. There has been no clear indication, although management have guided to a listing, there's no clear indication when that is actually going to take place, particularly in the near term. So I think that Cell C transaction is certainly hurting them in the short term. And, you know, there's a lot of talk about spectrum auctions out there, you know, the likes of MTN and Vodacom and Telkom to a certain extent, but more Vodacom and MTN are well placed to take advantage of a spectrum auction from a cash perspective or a short-term cash input perspective. And Cell C is not in that comfortable place. So, you know, markets are extremely efficient and they can see the headwinds at play here. I'd be a little bit concerned about it. There's been some massive moves over the last couple of days in Blue Telecoms to the downside. But again, I'm not going anywhere near it until I can see a structural fundamental turnaround in the company from an income statement and a balance sheet perspective. So it's probably at the right price that you're seeing in the market at the moment.
Mm. And that balance sheet of Blue under significant pressure, if you look at how they account for Cell C, it's an associate. And there are some SPVs involved, sure, some guarantees that have been issued. So hopefully some clarification soon, because some of that Cell C debt is also up to be repaid or refinanced within the next month or two.
Yes.
So it's definitely a tight spot. And once again, a lot depends on the management and the quality of management and if they will be able to get out of this rut. The other one that was mentioned was Sappi.
Yes. Look, I mean, Sappi also structurally in a tough place at the moment. And I think taking a step back, you know, you've got to just look at the broader economic environment. You know, I just think that just from South Africa specific, I mean, you know, the activity from a corporate perspective is actually very much at all-time lows. You know, I just think that you know, to see a structural turnaround in a lot of the corporate activity at the moment, we do need to see some GDP growth. And I think you've seen that shrinkage in the likes of a Sappi. You're not just SA orientated, but again, I just think that the income statement balance sheet's under pressure. I've been kicking the tires a little bit on a similar company like Mondi. Also, a very well-run business, Mondi, but you know, in terms of prospective valuations looking forward, it's not a very exciting space at the moment. It almost looks like a little bit of a portfolio filler, but obviously if it re-rates to the downside at the right level, starts looking interesting again, you know, and you obviously want to look at high cash generative businesses, decent dividend yields that are coming through, and the potential to work through this tough economic environment that we're in at the moment. So I just think it's a contraction from a GDP perspective, and we've seen that in the recent data, and we do need to start to see some broader stimulus from a South Africa perspective.
Mm, agreed. Also, if you look at their two main products, paper and chemical cellulose, specifically chemical cellulose using clothing, competes against cotton and polyester. Polyester derived from oil. Once again, what's happening in the
Absolutely.
U.S. So that really has put pressure on Sappi. Okay, time for an ad break. We'll be back soon, just after this. Keep sending your questions. You can SMS us 33814 or email stockwatch@bdtv.co.za. We'll be back soon. Welcome back. Let's take a look at what international markets are doing. Looking at the US, the S&P 500 almost flat, slightly down, while the NASDAQ up about 0.4% with technology leading the NASDAQ index, and the Dow Jones Industrial Index down 0.28%. In Europe, the FTSE 100 ended down also slightly at 7,536. The CAC 40 in Paris also down at 5,572, while the DAX in Germany was down a bit more, down 0.85%. You're still watching Stockwatch, and with me in the studio is Derek Janssen van Rensburg from Anchor Securities. I'm Jean-Pierre Verster from Protea Capital Management, and we are taking your calls via SMS, email, and Twitter. One via email is from Wesley, and he says, hello, Sibanye, yes or no, to gain exposure to gold and palladium in one stock. What do you think, Derek?
Yeah, look, you know, one thing I must say about Sibanye is that management have certainly created a substantial business from very little as it unbundled out of, I think it was out of the Goldfield stable that it unbundled. And where its position now, again, very much a risk on, risk off trade, lots of volatility attached to the company. They did do a recent, I think it was a book build, a capital raise at around 14 Rand 50 to rebolster the balance sheet. They negotiated a lot of the gold wage negotiations extremely well and came out of that quite strongly. We know that there's platinum negotiations taking place at the moment. Meeting with Amplats today. I think it's with Implats tomorrow. I'm not sure when the Sibanye meeting is on the Lonmin side. But I think it's an exciting stock. You've just got to be prepared to pay the right price for it. And again, the fundamentals attached to this business can swing in and out of your favor on a daily basis. So you've got to just pay very, very special attention to those metrics in terms of how you fundamentally analyze the stock. If there is a little bit of a risk off trade, you can see it catches a bit of flow, as we saw today, up at about 16.30. Starting to look a little bit expensive, in my opinion. I wouldn't be chasing it. A lot of risk attached to it. Personally, I think Impala is probably a better place to call it platinum, or in fact, palladium play, going to the question. So I would rather de-risk myself with something like an Impala at the right levels. We did see a trading statement recently which was supportive of the valuations that we're seeing in the market in terms of the share price. But yeah, if you've got the appetite, you can probably trade the stock.
Yes, trade, not invest. I think yes. The analogy, or a lot of people would say, it's not a stock for widows and orphans.
Absolutely.
Yeah. And if you look at the last month, it has indeed been exciting. A lot of the gold and platinum stocks rising quite sharply. Now, I've got an aversion to these stocks. I see them as commodity stocks, so it wasn't very exciting for me, I can tell you. But for a lot of investors, they do have their day in the sun. And as you say, for trading, yes. For investments, maybe give it a miss.
Yeah.
We've got another email from Omar. He says, good evening, guys. Is it a good time to buy, or should we wait until regulatory issues have been resolved in the case of Glencore? What do you think?
Look, it's certainly a lot cheaper than the rest of the mining stocks, and it comes back to the question or the point that you raised earlier. Are you prepared to go into this cyclical part of the market where you're driven by currencies, commodity prices? You know, I'm a little bit, I would tend to shy away from it. I think a company like Anglo's is probably better positioned if you just look at the current debt on balance sheet, the potential cash flow that they're going to generate over the next 6 months, and the potential of returning further cash to shareholders in the way of a special div or increased dividend. So I think it's a company like Anglo is a little bit better placed. We know Glencore have been doing share buybacks, but you know, it smells a little bit from a regulatory perspective. And whenever you pick that up in the market space, you don't want to be the last out. We've seen what happened with the likes of a Steinhoff and some of the other regulatory players that have taken place in the market. So I would tend to shy away from Glencore personally, and rather stick to the likes of an Anglo's or a Billiton. Just know you're in a very cyclical pocket of the market, and you've got to keep a very close eye on those fundamentals, as we suggested, to the platinum and palladium stocks.
Agreed. There are three letters in investments that get a lot of attention these days, and it's ESG, environmental, social, and governance issues. And when it comes to Glencore, unfortunately, there's a few red marks against maybe all three of them. So I agree with you. Rather wait and see what happens in that case. Next email from Rodney. He says, hi guys, ANH, Anheuser-Busch, seems to be recovering from its sell-off. Is it a decent buy also for its rand hedge quality?
So there's a few moving parts to Anheuser at the moment. You know, there's a much talked about China listing that's going to take place, extremely high valuations, but certainly going to address some of the debt on balance sheet. We've had US treasuries that have come down from circa 3% levels down towards those 2% levels, which brings into play some of these dividend counters from a global perspective. So you have seen a re-rating in share prices in the likes of an Anheuser. And it's certainly been a stock to hold, particularly over the last 8 months. It's done extremely well. I am starting to see some very bullish commentary around Anheuser. I just fear that there's a lot of positivity being priced into the stock in the short term. I think that it operates in multiple markets. It's certainly got the multiple market penetration that ticks a lot of boxes for me, and certainly makes up a component of a portfolio at this stage of the game. But just be tentative to the fundamental valuations. I think you could probably see this rally continue. But you know, you want to take a view that you want to buy into weakness. Keep a special eye on what the Fed does, or the upcoming Fed meeting, and what those US treasuries are going to do in the short term. I like the stock. I'm a holder of it, and I'll probably look to be a holder over the next 6 to 12 months and analyze it from there.
I also hold the stock. I like it. I'm hoping that the listing of the Asia business unlocks some value. I went through the annual report a while back, and I was quite pleased that they give a lot of emphasis on non-alcoholic beer, which is one of the dangers, or one of the threats of the established beer companies, where more and more young people and just generally people are more aware of their health.
Sure.
Because of that, taking in less alcohol, and they've cottoned onto that, and it was always the craft beer that was a while ago the big new trend, and now it's the non-alcoholic beer. So as long as they keep their eye on that, and they can make up for some losses maybe in their core Budweiser, Western, Midwestern American heartland with some non-alcoholic beers, they should do okay. So I'm hopeful for that. Next question from Patrick. He says, hi, please ask Derek his view on AVI. Can I buy at these levels?
AVI, a very well-run business. I think, you know, just from a fundamental perspective, very cash generative, some really good quality brands inside that stable. And I think given the current market environment that we were talking about earlier, I think they've actually managed to come out of it relatively unscathed, with very little downward pressure on the stock over the short term. So I think you've got a nice dividend underpinned to the stock. I think it's not going to shoot the lights out, but it is very cash generative. So I certainly think that if you've got it, I'd hold it. And you've probably got some time to buy it if you are looking to buy it. But yeah, you know, if it starts to move into the mid-80s, or around those levels, I'd certainly look at it from a buying perspective. But certainly a 3 to 5 year story. And again, taking a look at that macro picture, you just want to see a little bit of GDP growth come out, a little bit more consumer spend, and you'll certainly see a stock like this re-rate, in my opinion. So I wouldn't sell it. I would keep it and hold it.
I was disappointed by Green Cross now that performed after they bought it. It sounds like it was really dressed up for sale, and then afterwards the profitability really fell very sharply. Hopefully they can get close to the previous profitability. And then the big question is, what's going to happen to I&J with the FRAP 2020 coming, the BE empowerment for fishing rights? Hopefully they'll get a nice price or be able to empower I&J. But once again, a very good management, very good with capital allocation. So AVI have shown in the past that they are good with that, and we're hopeful that they get a nice bit of capital from I&J as well. Okay, next question from Luke. He asks that we discuss Into. I'll go first this time.
Okay.
So quite tough in the UK retail property sector. especially in the outlying areas where Intu owns a lot of shopping malls. We saw with Brexit this pent up almost anger about all the Polish and the other foreigners coming in and taking jobs, especially outside of the big centres. And that means your economy in London is doing very differently to your economy
Absolutely.
In the rest of England. And that has an impact on those malls. So when you have negative reversions, you have higher rates and taxes, you have tenants under pressure, you have a lot of them doing CVAs, these agreements where they cut their rental. That's not pretty. And then you have a company structure where you have to pay out the majority of your earnings every year, so you can't naturally de-gear. So for me, unless you have a suitor coming in, there almost was one
yes.
From the US, they really are in a very tight spot. What do you think?
Yeah, I agree with that. I think they are in a very tight spot. And I think also if you just look at the economic situation from a UK perspective, I think it's in a tough spot. And it's there's a few companies, even in the South African context, that have got UK exposure. And we've seen that contraction take place from a sales perspective, particularly in the retail exposed space. So I think that's got a knock-on effect to the likes of those shopping centres that they're exposed to. And, in terms of a growth prospectus looking forward, I can't pencil in any further growth in the short term. Or when I say short term, I talk 6 to 12 months or even 18 months. So I think the only sort of silver lining with a stock like Intu is really the potential of corporate action. You know, you hope that there's net asset value in some of these stocks, and you taking a 3 to 5 year view where you do start to see a little bit of an economic turnaround from a UK perspective and see a bit of an uplift.
Agreed. But retail under pressure, and it takes us to our stock pick, so we won't get to all the questions, but my stock pick is Shopify, listed in Canada, and it actually is in the same trend where it helps online merchants to do everything on the internet, from building the website, sourcing, taking the payments, delivering the product, and you outsource your whole business to Shopify. Great business, quite expensive, but they keep on delivering period after period. So that's my stock pick tonight. Derek, in 30 seconds, what's yours?
Yeah, so tonight I'm going with Naspers. Obviously, we've got the upcoming process listing that's taking place in the Eurozone. So really the view that I'm taking over the next 6 months is I certainly think that there's going to be an uplift in the discount to net asset value, particularly in that process listing. So I'm using Naspers as an entry into this process listing and potentially buy more post the listing. And if there is an uptick in the process discount to net asset value, I think it'll have a knock-on effect to Naspers. And I think just taking a 6 to 12 month view on a stock like Naspers, use the weakness that we see in the tough markets that we exposed to at the moment as an opportunity to accumulate. We all know the signature asset is Tencent, and a lot is going to be derived from that share price, but certainly still bullish on it, and I'm happy to hold Naspers.
Excellent. Thanks, Derek.
Good.
That was Stockwatch for tonight. Thanks for joining me, Jean-Pierre Verster from Protea Capital Management and Derek Janssen van Rensburg from Anchor Securities. Someone else will take more of your questions tomorrow night. Thank you. Goodbye. My stock pick is Shopify, listed in Canada, and it actually is in the same trend where it helps online merchants to do everything on the internet, from building the website, sourcing, taking the payments, delivering the product, and you outsource your whole business to Shopify. Great business, quite expensive, but they keep on delivering period after period. So that's my stock pick tonight. Derek, in 30 seconds, what's yours?
Yeah, so tonight I'm going with Naspers. Obviously, we've got the upcoming process listing that's taking place in the Eurozone. So really the view that I'm taking over the next 6 months is I certainly think that there's going to be an uplift in the discount to net asset value, particularly in that process listing. So I'm using Naspers as an entry into this process listing and potentially buy more post the listing. And if there is an uptick in the process discount to net asset value, I think it'll have a knock-on effect to Naspers. And I think just taking a 6 to 12 month view on a stock like Naspers, use the weakness that we see in the tough markets that we exposed to at the moment as an opportunity to accumulate. We all know the signature asset is Tencent, and a lot is going to be derived from that share price, but certainly still bullish on it, and I'm happy to hold Naspers.
Excellent. Thanks, Derek.
Good.
That was Stockwatch for tonight. Thanks for joining me, Jean-Pierre Verster from Protea Capital Management and Derek Jansen van Rensburg from Anchor Securities. Someone else will take more of your questions tomorrow night. Thank you. Goodbye.